Start up like this, or like this, and hit the start button to flip back and forth. You can make the important things big, keep the small stuff small, and arrange it all around you. You can be all work, all play, or even both at the same time. You can do it all simpler and easier on your Windows tablet, PC, or Surface. That's the new Windows. One experience for everything in your life.
Hello, this is Michael Palermo, and in this episode of Dev Radio, Building Windows 8 Apps in Half the Time, we are going to take a journey. We're going to be taking a look at how you can create games with Project Spark. And I am so excited today to have two members affiliated with Project Spark with us today. I'd like to introduce you to Mike and Henry. Mike and Henry, how are you today?
Good, how are you?
Good, happy. So how are you guys involved with Project Spark?
So I'm the creative director on Project Spark, responsible sort of the main vision and manage the design team. And I've been on the project since day one and helped ideate the concept and everything.
Henry does it all. So I'm Mike Lesko. I'm the community manager on Project Spark. And other than getting sick by Henry because of all the Twitch
streams, that's debatable on where that started.
Podcasts and things we do. I kind of manage our community, make sure we're getting our messaging out and really kind of getting people excited about what we have in Project Spark.
Fantastic. Well, I will have to say, since I know it's in beta, I was privileged to be part of that recipient to start playing and messing around with it, of which I have. And the entire time that I started getting involved and really started playing with it, I immediately started having questions from a developer's perspective. So you have so many things out there on YouTube, and there's so much good content out there. I want to make sure today's focus was going to be something that the developer community would really appreciate, kind of tackling some of those tough questions, if you will. So my first question for you is, who really is the target audience for Project Spark?
That's a good question.
That is a great question.
That is a good question.
I think depending on who you ask, I think everybody has a different idea.
I think, you know, we tried to make the game appeal as broad as possible. And, you know, we didn't really want to limit anything. We started, however, with sort of a inviting and warm and friendly fantasy theme. So, you know, we wanted to make sure that we were sort of inclusive of all types of age ranges and genders and things like that. And at the heart of Project Spark, we have Kodu as our visual programming language. And that has been deployed in dozens of schools, and it's tested all the way down to 8 years old. But I think, you know, when you think about the dream about making games or creating, that goes on to forever. So to give you some, like, sort of backstory is when we started it, we started researching sort of what does it mean to be in a sandbox, a digital sandbox, and what does it mean to create in this new age, right? And we looked at how games today are very linear, or very often they're sort of pushing you from left to right or to goals, and we said, let's make this all about play. And what we did was we said, you know, there's two things that are inherent. Everybody's born with the ability to play and create. And that's what we focused on. So we really think it's accessible to everyone.
And that's definitely one of our goals, is we want to make sure in everything that we do, from the way we've designed the game to the way we run our community to the way we're releasing content, we really want it to make the game so that it fits everybody. So that there's no one right way to do it, that whether you're an artist or you're a programmer or whatever your skill is, you're a sculptor, there's something for you to do in Project Spark.
Well, I love that. I love how broad that is. But then the flip side of the question, it may sound like the same question, but it is different. So now I've created a game with Project Spark, and I'm excited, and I got that creativity going. Who's my target audience for that game?
Well, you know, I think the flexibility of the tool really allows you to sort of hone in on that yourself. I would say, because of the inherent, you know, building blocks we give you, that they're going to gravitate mostly towards, you know, things that are approachable for a lot of ages and things that are sort of family friendly and stuff like that. But, you know, people have been able to do things like rig up guns and do shooting games. And, you know, really it's up to the people who make the content sort of what they target within some moderation boundaries, of course. But, you know, I think that, you know, it comes down to the user. When I look at sort of the behavior of what people are finding, you know, in the marketplace, I would say it comes down to a lot of just, you know, players with curiosity, what's new and what's something they've never seen before. And again, I think that appeals to everybody. You know, everybody's got this, you know, curious kind of nature to them.
Yeah, what we're finding is that we have a lot of different sort of segmentations of our community that are looking at different things. Some are really into really kind of the coding aspect, people that are making UIs and other functionality and things like that. And other people are really into RPGs and stories. And others are into more sort of almost the mobile game type, like somebody made Flappy Bird on Project Spark. And so we're seeing like these sort of breakdown of the community, and we have these creators that are making things for their flock. And it's kind of cool, and we're starting to see them all start to get followings as they create things, as everybody's like, oh, I'm looking for the next thing that, say, what Andrew's going to make and things along those lines, which is really cool.
Yeah, if you look at sort of our main menu, we serve up sort of 5 featured levels all the time. And right now, the diversity there is pretty strong. We have a pinball game. We have a little adventure about a little bunny rabbit that's cotton literally tail. A cottontail, this whole little story adventure game, all the way to this kind of epic RPG. At one point, we had an old arcade Missile Command type of throwback game on there. And all of these levels have, you know, been downloaded. We've got some now that are, you know, over 10,000 downloads, and we're just in a very closed beta. So, you know, we're really hitting a pretty, pretty much a platform is really what we're hitting.
I've definitely noticed, especially with the searching that I did when I wanted to kind of take things to the next level, that there's a lot of members in the community that are very excited about this and probably stretching things out and doing things that you probably weren't even expecting to be done with Project Spark. Do you have any comments on that?
Keep doing that. That's what we want to see. I mean, you know, when you think about conventional games and, you know, everything that happens is sort of choreographed and everything is there very deliberately, we knew very early on, just with our internal game jams, people were going to do stuff we never imagined was possible. And that's sort of the power of Kodu, and it's the power of the way we design things in kind of this, not just a creation language, but a language that really facilitates game design. So when we put those things together and we turn around and people give us something unexpected, we couldn't be more excited about that. That's exactly what we're hoping for. Mechanics that people could never have prototyped before can now be done. Genres that were sort of once forgotten are now, you know, resurrected. And that's the stuff we're most excited about.
I think in a lot of ways that's really the big dream of Project Spark is that, you know, obviously with something like Unity or other things, like people who you know, are skilled can make some amazing things and they can come up with whatever they can think of. With Project Spark, we want to bring that power to everyone, right? So we have so many gamers out there that maybe aren't up to speed technically. I know your audience is obviously, they're very, very savvy, but there are a lot of folks that aren't even at that level yet, right, that maybe want to get there. We want to give them a chance to tell their story, to get out that great idea they have. And when they create something that we, you know, I love nothing more than showing level from that dream and the rest of the guys on the team and say, hey, look at this. And people are like, there's no way they can do it. How could they possibly do that? And they look at it like, wow, no way. We never thought you could do it that way. And that is just an awesome feeling.
Yeah. And with the Xbox One beta, we have full body, voice, and facial motion capture coming with Kinect. So I think we're going to see even more stuff we didn't expect. And, you know, people are excited about making their own home movies and machinima type of stuff with this. So, you know, we hope to be doing this for a long time and continually surprised.
Yeah. Possibilities are kind of endless and exciting.
But I will have to say that my very first creation with Project Spark was to create a spoof video based on an internal meeting that we had at Microsoft, and it went over very well. So
that's awesome.
It's very easy to do, and I really enjoyed that, and I thought it was a lot of fun. And I would like to make a comment on the whole idea that just because a developer can go deep, I can go deep if I want to. I can make some games with some of those other gaming engines, but I think the flip side is if you can create something wow and amazing and do so without all that effort that's required, why wouldn't you? And
so,
enjoyed that. I've enjoyed the creative aspect of that because I'm not being buried in all of the syntax and all of the how do I get this done. I've kind of enjoyed that creative experience. So I'm hoping that the strong and savvy developers that are out there, if you don't overlook this just because it's simpler. Embrace that simplicity and actually see what your creativity can do and start to take over on that.
No, I think you're right. And that's really one of the key spirits of the game is sort of, you know, if you think about the sort of process of what you need to build a game or an experience, what Project Spark sort of takes away the need for is planning. You can go in there with a giant idea and, you know, you can have these things and plan them out. But at the end of the day, you can get in there and you can just doodle. You know, we talk about linear games when you go from left to right, or, you know, you think about like a Mario game and you jump on one enemy and then you jump on two and then over a pit. that sort of challenge yourself mentality comes right out the minute you jump into Project Spark, where you're like, okay, I'm going to make a third-person action game, and that's really the only seed you need. And then from there, you start challenging yourself for hours and hours. We've got tons of mails from people who said, you guys gave me the beta key at 12 at night, and I was playing until 4 in the morning, and I have to work at 7.
Yeah.
I hate slash love you guys.
Right. It's funny because we do – some of our greatest creators are actually developers, and whether they develop, you know, apps for phones or, you know, other things, that these guys are the ones that are in there. And because the code and language is really deep and robust, these guys are going in and they're making some really, really amazing stuff.
Yeah.
And we're seeing them kind of come out with stuff that maybe some of the more average users are like, wow, how did you do this? And a lot of these guys are gravitating, and it's kind of cool. They're making systems, right? They're not even trying to make games. They're making inventories, or they're making UIs, or they're making other things because they find it fun and easy, and they see that value. And it's something Henry talks about a lot, that you create something and you give it to somebody else, and then you see them do something, and a lot of people really get enjoyment out of that. So that's very cool.
Yeah, and when you do game or interactive media development, like, sometimes the most important part is the hardest part to get to, which is just getting your stuff in software and being able to iterate on it and just play it. And, you know, as a designer, I always feel like that's sort of the most powerful and sometimes the most critical time. So Spark kind of gets you there very rapidly. And we had a pillar very early on saying that you should go from nothing to something very quickly. And I think, you know, we've accomplished that. And I think that that's where it pays off.
I agree, totally. So let me just comment now on the fact that since you guys brought Unity up a little while ago, I might as well go ahead and follow that train of thought. I would like to hear probably more of a comparison. What is it that, what would you say would be the comparison between something like a Project Spark versus a Unity? Where would be the trade-offs?
Right. Well, you know, I think technically, you know, there's a lot of different kind of pros and cons there, and you sort of go at it from two different angles. When we started Project Spark, we were very focused on how do we gamify the act of creation? How do we make the very act of making a game fun? And I think when you use other game tools, you can debate, but I would say that you know, it's not a priority for them to make the actual act of using their tools fun and enjoyable. And that was one of the things that was ingrained from the very beginning on Project Spark. Even little things like reward loops or, you know, audio sort of accomplishment sounds when you do things, and the feedback from just, you know, generating terrain, right? It looks magical. We have effects that fly off of the terrain and stuff like that. So we were very focused on gamifying creation, making it fun to create. The other thing you obviously hit on is sort of the simplicity layer. You know, when you turn on something like Unity, you might as well sort of be on a blank screen, right? And you have to go get plugins to do visual programming or any other things you do, or start generating meshes and things like that. Where Project Spark lets you come in from lots and lots of different directions. You can play Crossroads and just start playing a game and remix it and start altering it as you play it. You can go in from a blank slate, of course, and do whatever you want. Or you can jump in through what the community's made. And I think one of the really special things is every community game is remixable. So if you see something really cool out there or something you really like, you can just go ahead and see how the community did it, or maybe even actually grab that creation. Like Mike said, somebody made a UI and said, take this UI, share it, put it in all of your adventure games. And I think that that's something that, you know, is very accessible because it's not something that's just in a library. It's not, here's your UI library. It's somebody who built it, put it in a game, and then you can take it out and put it in your game. And that context means a lot.
I think, like, one way to look at it, comparing it to Unity, imagine if in Unity you could go to any game that was using Unity, and at any point you could hit a button that said remix, and boom, now you can go in and you can tweak any part of that game that you want, add stuff, do stuff. That is sort of what I think is really the big difference in Project Spark.
And, you know, like I said, obviously Unity's got different goals and different purposes, so, you know, putting it out to multiple platforms and stuff like that is a different situation. But think about it like this. When you go into those other engines, you know, I've used Unreal a bunch and Kismet, when you debug something, you're looking through script and you're looking through code and you're doing memory management and stuff like that. When you debug something in Project Spark, you're playing your creation. We have debug tools, but the best way to debug is to play it.
Right.
And I think that that's a big difference right there. We're about that play and make cycle, and that quick iteration.
So I don't know if anyone has ever asked you this question, and I wouldn't be surprised if I wasn't the first. I hope I am. Has anyone ever compared Project Spark with you to the movie Inception?
Yes. In fact, like Mike made some jokes about how somebody's going to make Microsoft Word in Project Spark.
All right.
And somebody's going to make Project Spark inside Project Spark.
Yeah.
So we've had a couple of jokes about that.
Yeah, we have the community, they've been using the hashtag Spark section sometimes whenever they see something a little weird. But yeah, that they really want to make Project Spark and Project Spark. And I don't even know what that would look like, but I'm really excited to see how they try to kind of play that out.
Well, from my perspective, the perception is like this. I felt like, you know, in the movie Inception, it's a dream within a dream. Mm-hmm. With Project Spark, I feel like it's a game within a game.
Yep.
And especially when you're doing Crossroads, then you feel like it's a game within a game within a game. Because now you have that different layer. And I've explained that to individuals, and it sounds intriguing because you have to look at the whole experience as a game. And once you get that, then you realize within that game you're creating a game. And then it gets more interesting.
And, you know, we think the power of that is, you know, you look at what has kind of like typically been creation, and you can argue what the number is, but it's a small portion of the people that make, you know, user-generated content and some of these other programs and tools and games and stuff like that. And our goal from the beginning was to flip that. Instead of 2% or 5%, it's 95%, it's 98%. And the only way we could do that was by making a game sort of within a game, so creating itself was a game. And the next big thing, of course, you know, we focused on simplicity. But I think the last big tool is, hey, it's great that you can create something, but can you make something meaningful? Can you make something good? Can you speak that language of game or art and stuff like that? And that's where Crossroads really comes in, because we don't, you know, we're teaching sort of the three-act structure, and who's your protagonist and who's your antagonist and what is the quest line and what is your reward loop? And those are things that we feel are not just sort of empowering people to learn, you know, programming and some STEM stuff, but it's actually teaching them how to make games. And that's an important thing, because anybody who cracked open one of those other tools and dives right into Kismet, they've never made a game before. They sort of go, where do I start? And Project Spark gives you a lot of ways to start, and it's really suited and tailored towards you.
Yeah. Yeah. So in that, though, as much as I love that concept, in that is, I would say, one of your trade-offs is that there really isn't a monetization feature to Project Spark right now. In other words, the goal isn't necessarily build a game, and then once it's finished, you're packaging and deploying it even to the Xbox, you know, store or the Windows store. What do you have to say about that?
Well, I mean, we focus on sort of three core things, and we think, you know, from an emotional standpoint, Project Spark can deliver something that I would say very few other games or experiences can, and that is sort of the emotion of challenging yourself, which we've already talked about, the emotion of that pride of sharing, which I think is something really special, and just putting your level out there and seeing 20,000 downloads in a couple weeks is amazing.
Developers can relate to that part, right? Putting something out there that people see and go, wow.
Exactly. And then the third thing is collaboration. And having it be sort of free and having a community that piggybacks off of each other, I use the analogy of the Postal Service, which is sort of this indie supergroup that made a CD over the mail. We want people to collaborate like that. And having sort of this open free market allows that collaboration to take place, because I can play everybody's games, they can play mine, and we can work together. So those three things are sort of these emotional lifters that really trigger responses inside you when you play Project Spark. When it comes down to actual raw monetization, you know, we are a service. We want to continue evolving. So, you know, those are things that we get feedback on around and a lot of that stuff. And we constantly measure what is our philosophies and our pillars and our main goals. But, you know, from a reward standpoint, we absolutely do reward people with something very tangible. So in-game, as you play, you earn in-game credits. And you get this, you know, large base set of things, and you can do tons and tons of stuff. People recreated the first world of Fable with just the sort of base set you get from the free download. But you can add content onto that, and you can sort of mix and match. And, hey, I want a castle, and this is a great sort of snap to go castle. I'll buy that. You can buy it up front with tokens, which are money, or you can use this in-game currency. So as you create and as people download your stuff and they like it, you get rewarded tons and tons of this in-game currency. So all of our creators are actually getting something that has a tangible value. They're able to get all of this additional content and all of this other stuff with inside Project Spark.
And I think like the real kind of goal is that the top creators, and I think we're getting kind of close with what some of the credits these guys are earning, the top creators should, if Henry balances everything correctly, Henry the economist balances it all correctly.
And Jared.
Throw Jared under the bus when it comes to the question. If everything's working, those top creators should be earning enough in-game credit so that they can basically purchase everything or unlock everything in-game with that. But, you know, your question is valid. Like, that is something that we hear a lot from the community. People wonder about that. And, you know, it's, you know, never say never. I think at this point we're focused on, is this, you know, can we make this a game that works really well, that's free and everybody can get in and do that? And then if it becomes as popular as, you know, maybe it might, then maybe that's something we revisit.
Yeah, definitely our core goal is to you know, show that people can make meaningful, fun entertainment with Project Spark. And that is our first focus.
Well, I'll have to confess something to you guys. My first initial reaction to not seeing my ability to monetize was at first something that made me feel resistant to Project Spark. But then when you get involved with it, and I can now speak about this because I allowed myself to immerse myself into it, I realized with that and all the community that's doing it, what I would say for the pure creative reasons, I think what you're seeing is a wonderful foundation of content and creativity and thought going into what everyone's getting into. And that, because it's not tainted with the monetization at this time, has been actually refreshing because I'm just seeing pure creativity in play.
Yep.
Like you said, who knows about the future? But at this time, I love that you've done it the way you've done it because I think what you're doing is it's a call to action to the purist out there, to the creationists, to the ones who really want to take it to the limit. And I think that that's awesome. And I've been seeing some, I just cannot believe how incredible it is what people are doing. They are tricking your system to do some things that are wild.
Yeah. It's really funny because we have a lot of folks are now creating things and, you know, some of the videos that they've made or some of these levels are getting them a lot of publicity. Like Cliffy B, like is retweeting and talking about some of these games that this, you know, an 18-year-old kid in Tennessee has created and put up there. So you see this as being part of, you know, becoming part of somebody's portfolio. People that want to get into game design and game development, suddenly here's a way for you to quickly prototype up your game idea and show it, and then do another one. And when you see, you know, if we're hiring somebody, we see, look, this guy can make all these great games over and over again in Project Spark. Maybe that's somebody we want on our team. And so that's one of the things that we think is cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a proving ground for a lot of different things. And it depends on what you want to commit to that. But Soren, who's our tech director, he did a great talk. And one of the comments that came out, because the article was on Gamma's Future, was from a producer at BioWare. And the first thing he said was, man, if somebody made a great game in Project Spark, I would absolutely take them seriously when they come in for an interview, right? Like, proving out that you can make an interactive experience, which is probably the most subjective and hardest thing, and now you can do it with this free tool pretty quickly and pretty easily, is a huge leap forward. I think it's pretty revolutionary, and I hope to see, you know, where we are in the future just be as exciting as we hope it to be, because if it is, I think we're going to really change some paradigms out there. When you look at, like, what people have made now, I'll be honest. We have team members that run over to levels the community shared and go, how did they do that? I got to look at this. I got to see this. And it's so exciting and invigorating to see that. And, you know, on the other end of that level is a story from that creator. And you hear those stories about, right, I've always dreamed of making this RPG and it's, you know, it's something I can finally do it. Or, you know, we had a lot of stories about, hey, I made a game with my kid. I'm a professional game developer. And I make games for a living, but I was able to sit down with my 10-year-old and we made a game together. It's just, you know, we are completely fueled by that.
Right. And it's very powerful.
It's very powerful.
I agree. So, you know, obviously for the ones who are participating in Project Spark as those who are creating, there's not any monetization. But I would like you to comment on what exactly is Spark Power and why would someone be interested in that? And if they are interested in that, what might that mean for them?
Right. So as you play things, you can basically play anything that you downloaded or bought or, you know, used in-game currency to unlock. So as people make levels, they're going to have a variety of different content. And Spark Time is something that currently right now you have 30 minutes a day to play stuff for things you don't have. So if somebody makes a level with something you haven't unlocked or you don't own, it consumes some of your Spark time. And a lot of the reasons why we initially did that is because we don't want the community playing all day. If you look at sort of the way the challenge system and the things that generate these currencies work is they encourage creativity. They encourage creating stuff. So when you are out of Spark time, the idea is that you go back into the daily challenges and the challenges, you start creating, you earn some more currency, and then you can use that currency to buy Spark time right there. Once you buy Spark Time, it has a bunch of other benefits where it doubles
Spark Power.
Spark Power. It gives you unlimited spark time, and it doubles all of your currency earns and all of your XP earns. So basically, once you buy it, you can continue to roll it as long as you're actively creating in the game. And, you know, we're obviously still tuning the numbers and playing around with it. And, you know, we're making sure that it's not a hard wall, but it's a soft wall. And it's a wall that encourages creation. And, you know, we're continually assessing things. But we think, in general, it's successful because our creation numbers have been super, super high.
Right. It's really a different look on free-to-play. And, you know, I know a lot of people, you know, you have a developer audience, so I don't want to bash free-to-play games too much. But, you know, a lot of people don't like the whole free-to-play aspect. They really get concerned about it. We kind of take a different look at it, where if somebody makes the next Flappy Bird or something in Project Spark that becomes just great and everybody wants to play it, we want people to be able to play that and play that as long as they want without having to ever spend a dime of their money. The only ask we have, and it's somewhat selfish for us and selfish for our community, is that we're going to say, well, in order for you to get credits to allow you to keep doing this, you're going to need to do some challenges. And these challenges, oh, they're going to make you kind of create some things. And that's us kind of trying to trick people, hey, start creating, and kind of maybe get them to say, hey, this is kind of fun, and turn those players into creators.
And those challenges lead you through little visual programming tips and little missions to do to challenge yourself, like make a village and then defend it against attackers and stuff like that.
So that's kind of our evil little, I guess, our evil. You've caught us out. You've figured out our want to make it turn players into creators.
That's hilarious. So we have talked a little bit about some of the things that you can purchase, some of the add-ons. I saw a lot of very cool gaming assets. I was happy, since I'm based out of Arizona, to see a desert theme that can be purchased. So
I think most of the country would be happy to see a desert theme right now.
Right about now.
So my question would be, who's making those assets? Can anyone, or what's the story of it?
So those specific assets that are in the marketplace are made with an internal team and some external outsourcing. But all of the sort of concept, all of the spirit of what they are is derived internally. And we focus on each of those assets are not just about adding assets to the game. Think of them like, we call them content packs, because they're really about wish fulfillment, right? If you think about sort of little play sets or, you know, building blocks that come with like little scenarios and things like that, these have those built in. So they're sort of kickstarters to, you know, new games and new levels of inspiration, right? If you look at the castle, it comes with what we call our assemblies, which are things grouped together that already work. And it comes with things like, you know, little tower defense type of mechanisms and stuff like that. So all of these content packs not only expand your artistic library, but they give you sort of more stepping stones into other creation areas. The other key thing about, you know, generating content is, in addition to the marketplace, people can obviously, you know, make their own objects in the game. So by combining things, you know, we have a very fantasy art style right now, but we do provide primitives. And primitives are just, you know, spears and toruses and cylinders and things like that. And they can change their colors and combine them together and even intersect them and glue them together and put brains into those things. So what you'll have is, you know, people are building, you know, things that look like the Star Wars AT-ST walker because they're using these primitives. So that is sort of the second way to ingest these items into the community, is make a great game or a level or a world that has these items, and the community can share them and they can save these things out. And now suddenly have the stone dragon. We never put a stone dragon in the game that breathes fire. Somebody made that, glued it all together, shared it with the community, and we've seen a couple of other games. Somebody did a Godzilla game with it. That's the two ways to do it.
Because, again, we have a segment of our audience, these creators, that they're focused on gluing together objects and making cool things that aren't in the game, like the stone golem.
Somebody
stone
made a dragon. Wireframe car.
Right.
Like a completely wireframe car, and then they filled it in with the primitives, and it's a realistic-looking car.
And it was cool. It was a really cool-looking car, but that's what that person wanted. That was their thing. They're that type of builder, that type of tinkerer. And then somebody else took it, added physics, put it on a track, and made a racing game. And that's kind of the cool collaboration that we see that gets us really excited.
That is a fantastic story. And I will have to say, when I discovered that some of these very new-looking objects were actually built by the community through what is made available from scratch, hats off to the creative power of the community, because it has been amazing to see what they can do. And I think behind the spirit behind Project Spark, that's what I love about it right now, is just to see how people push the envelope and really make some awesome design and art, and also then turning around and making something game-like or adding that interaction. It's been excellent. So hats off to that. And I guess I would really like to know, what would you guys be able to say about the evolution of Project Spark? What can we anticipate in the future?
Well, you know, I think you know, logistically, you can think about things like expanding the theme and the sort of built-in tool set and things like that. On our sort of short roadmap is things like that. We want to dive a little bit more. We use Havok for physics. We want to dive a little bit more into, you know, what we call a sort of simplicity layers. And it's very easy to do, you know, a third-person action adventure game because we built a lot of that in. But we want to focus on that with vehicles and stuff like that hopefully soon. When you think about, like, far, far, far into the future, you know, part of the reason why, and I give Mike an amazing amount of credit to this, is, you know, we got in early with the community. We showed this game pre-alpha. We sat there and we just said, here it is. Like, here it is live. Like, the first thing we did is we demoed the game live for an hour and a half and just said, here it is. Oh, yeah, there's a there's some hiccups here. Oh, this crashed, right? My joke is always, okay, we were running without a net here. So we want the community to shape that. We want the community to sort of define what that is. And if that means pivoting into more of a game-making tool, something that is, you know, even deeper, maybe that's a direction we go. If it's more of an artist tool, right? We've got people who made watercolor-looking environments. Maybe it's more of an art tool. But our goal is sort of to be a creativity platform across all of the Microsoft devices that, you know, we can support. And I think there's a lot of different things that can mean, and we want the community to help us say what that is.
Right. I think, you know, because this is really new, I mean, this is uncharted territory, right? Nobody's really created something like this before. And really, we need the community's input. And I think they're really going to shape, and they have been shaping probably more than they know from
our internal absolutely.
Stuff. They have been shaping what we're doing. So when we look at what content packs we make, what features we're assessing, where we want to take the game, it's really dependent upon them, and it's in our best interest to be as transparent with them and share information with them, because we need them to tell us what they want, because they're going to be the ones that make it successful.
Yeah, I mean, we engineered sort of the opening to the game, and when you go through Crossroads, we highly encourage you to share your level. So we can sort of, you know, we were worried that people were going to have a barrier to sharing, they were going to be very apprehensive, and we sort of walked them through this almost tutorial, for lack of a better term, of sharing. And everybody was sharing, right? So we didn't actually need that. And it just proliferated in all these Crossroads levels. And our community was on top of that. They hit us with that right away. And we disabled it. And we said, you guys
so
are
basically,
right.
So basically what happened is, because everybody was sharing these Crossroads levels that were really pretty much very much the same with little tweaks, it filled the whole feed of new creations. So our community's going through and all they're seeing is all these Crossroads. And they're like, oh, you guys got to do something. And you know, to be fair, like we immediately went in and said, okay,
what, 2 weeks maybe?
Yeah, and took that out. And that's just one tiny example of something quick that we're doing to respond to the community's feedback, because, you know, ultimately they know what they want, and we need to give them what they want.
There's a fan site out there right now that's just on these amazing polls of, you know, what people want to see. And they're doing these polls around themes, and we're looking at that all around the team. And we're saying, if this is what people want, you know, that's what we should be doing.
And it's very important for us to empower them to do that, to say, hey, look, if you guys come up with this and come up with suggestions, we'll take it seriously and see what we can do. And I think we've done a pretty good job with that so far. They're going nuts with what their suggestions and
we have such a gamut of things. We have people suggesting holistic themes all the way down to programming suggestions and things for the visual programming language to make it easier or to empower them in a different direction. So we've got all types of things.
I think our list might have a few suggestions from Michael, too, on there.
Yeah, that's true. That's the thing that's amazing about this game. Like, when you come to sort of the live streams we do, people are blown away. Like, they answered our question. They talked back to us. Yeah, the live streams can be a little chaotic sometimes because that's what we want to do. And I challenge you to find someone who plays Project Spark and doesn't want to get in touch with us and give us feedback.
Right. That's sort of a gift and a curse, right?
I'm guilty. I'm guilty. I felt like I was taking advantage of you guys.
You know what? That means you're invested. People are getting invested. Yeah. And that doesn't happen with every game, right? And that's when we know we're really on to something.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's great. So we just encourage everybody to reach out to us.
Tell us we're wrong. Tell us we're right. Tell us you want something we don't have for you. Like, we want to hear those things.
Right.
So, right now, the supported platforms for Project Spark are what?
So we're currently available on Windows for Windows 8.1. We will be releasing a beta hopefully very, very soon on Xbox One, and then we will be available on Xbox 360.
I'm guessing by the time this comes out, we will be, you know, cross our fingers, we will be live on the Xbox One.
And everything goes across all the platforms. You can use controller, mouse and keyboard, touch, and that's not just to create. You can actually make games with that, so you can make touch-based games. And then we automatically convert them. So if somebody makes a keyboard game on PC and somebody fires it up on Xbox One, we do a very simple conversion over. So everything's playable and you don't need to limit yourself.
So think about this, though, and this is one of the things that I think is resonating with the community now. Imagine that you go down and you're on your Windows 8 PC and you create this game and you make your masterpiece. Then you push it out to the community. You can then go down, or somebody else, a friend or someone you don't know, is then playing your creation on the Xbox One. Tell me that is not just super awesome to do, that concept that, wow, I've just made a next-gen console game and people are playing it right now.
You can make a game on your Surface right now, and then when Titanfall comes out and you're playing with your friends, you can go, hey, check out this game I made in Spark, swap over to that party, and then play the game with, you know, that, you know, have your friends play the game you made on your Surface.
Yeah,
and that's another thing on our short roadmap is multiplayer. We've talked about multiplayer a lot, and that's something we'll be announcing more details on hopefully soon, but you will be able to play and create together.
I want to give Michael a scoop. So I'm going to tell you, we haven't told anybody how many people are going to be multiplayer. So I'm going to tell you, because, you know, Mike's our guy, and he gives us a lot of good questions. It's going to be more than one. You can quote me.
You heard it first here. So if someone has a beta right now, they're part of the beta program right now, when Xbox One goes live and they have an Xbox One as well, is there anything they will have to do to request participation into that program?
No, they will be, basically it's tied to your Xbox Live gamer tag. So as long as you're using the same gamer tag in Project Spark now on Windows 8.1, you will go into Xbox One and you'll have access to it there, so you'll be good to go. We've also sent out a lot of beta keys to folks who signed up both for the Xbox One beta and the Windows 8.1 beta on ProjectSpark.com. And those keys will work for either one. And if you use it once, it's going to give you access to all.
And for anybody that had a key for Windows and was waiting for Xbox One and gave it away, we're going to send out another key to people to give to friends or use it for themselves.
That's good. And so for those who have perhaps watching this episode and they've never even requested or they don't even know how to get involved with Project Spark, what do you say they need to do?
So if they go to projectspark.com, they just go right in and enter in their email address. Usually within 2 or 3 days, we're sending out keys pretty frequently. We also, because community is really important, we've seeded all our core community members with lots and lots of keys. And they're all giving them away in creative ways or whatever. So our goal is that if anybody is truly interested in Project Spark, whether they go to one of our community-run Twitch streams, which I'll give a plug for, it's twitch.tv/Project Spark Community, one word. Folks are streaming 24/7. There's always somebody
and
there.
And those are just, you know, creators in the community.
Just showing what they're creating. And if people go there and ask them, those guys have keys. And they like to throw it out and say, oh, well, what are you gonna do? Make sure people are serious and do it. But like all the community websites out there, these guys are always happy to help and encourage others.
Another good trick is to tweet Mike Lesko at like 3 a.m. That's when people also get to
Yeah, training. Sometimes that happens. In fact, one time people were doing that, and I emailed Henry. I said, Henry, are you still awake? He's like, yeah, I'll be up for a little bit. And I'm like, okay, good. And then I tweeted, hey, by the way, guys, Henry said that everybody who tweets Journey lyrics at him in the next 30 minutes will get a beta key.
It's true. It's true. So he said 30 minutes, and then he gave me, like, I think it was like 85 keys or something like that. And I get this giant list of 85 keys, and I'm like, for 30 minutes, are you sure? And I kid you not, I gave away 83 keys in 30 minutes. He nailed it.
You gotta ask, that's what I do, right? You gotta predict it. So absolutely. We want people, I mean, the thing is, we want to get as many people in creating, because that's really where the brilliance of Project Spark comes out and seeing what people create. So we want to get everybody in.
That sounds great. Do you have any further calls to action for those watching this show?
Yeah. So when are we going to be able to play your level?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, by the time this thing actually makes it out there, I'll guarantee there will be one to play.
All right.
So and we're gonna evaluate it on our Twitch stream, right? Are you okay with that? We'll give it a review. We'll give it, you know.
Sounds good.
Sounds good. Yeah. We'll call you out.
No, just hop in. You know, go to projectspark.com and you know, give us feedback and hop by the Twitch streams and say hello.
Yeah, we just can't wait to see what everybody creates.
I can't wait either. It's been an awesome journey so far, and I highly encourage for all of you who are watching this right now, if you have not yet experienced the journey of Project Spark, you need to do it. It is fantastic. It's an amazing experience and journey. It's not just a game. So you got to try it. I guarantee you, you won't be disappointed. That's going to wrap it up for this episode. Thank you so much, Mike and Henry, for joining us today. And we will make sure and stay in touch in the future, even if it just means I have questions bubbling up from the community that I'll forward over to you.
Absolutely.
I'm sure we're going to see a lot of interaction, which is what you would like.
Perfect.
Thanks.
Bring it on.
Take care.